nothing personal at this meeting, okay? Thank you, Charlie. And now Werner is going to talk about referent tracking in V3.
Yeah, thank you, Don.
I hope this works.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's what it is, America's future. If you look at the statistics, now you see the evolution of obesity in the United States is dramatically increasing, primarily amongst young children. And then I saw this worldwide HL7 membership. This is a puzzle. There seems to be a striking correlation between the increase in obesity incidence and HL7 activity. Now, before I continue, I have to tell you a little bit more about myself. So I studied medicine, I studied informatics. On the left bottom you see George Damore, which was my first mentor. He was the founder of CentEC251. He taught me everything about, at that time, what could be known about standardization, and I have been involved in quite some standardization efforts. Then I created a research company. It turned into a product which was marketed by Language and Computing, which I hear that very recently signed a very big contract with Kaiser Permanente on natural language understanding. I'm not part of Language and Computing anymore, but I'm proud that they realized it at this time. And then I started to work with Barry on ontology. And since April 2006, I'm in the Center of Excellence of Bioinformatics and Life Sciences in Buffalo. Buffalo, are you out of your mind? Well, I might be crazy, but I'm not stupid. So I know that there is a difference between correlation and causality. So if two things are correlated, then it might mean that A causes B, or B causes A, or there is an X that causes both. My hypothesis about HL7 is that HL7 causes obesity. Now, why is that? Okay, listen to your Surgeon General. The nation must take an informed, sensitive approach to communicate with and educate the American people about health issues related to overweight and obesity. Action. The nation must take action to assist Americans in balancing healthful eating with regular physical activity. Physical activity. HL7 says, the truth about the real world is constricted through a combination of such adequate statements only, and there is no clause in the RIM whose objects represent objective states of affairs or real processes independent from attributed statements. As such, there is no distinction between an activity and its documentation. Therefore, Americans watch sports. They read about sports, but they don't do sports other than carrying their own weight. It's normal. Now, what's the problem? Well, the problem has already been specified in 1978. A message to mapmakers. Highways are not painted red, rivers don't have country lines running down the middle, and you can't see contour lines on a mountain. What HL7 lacks, in my opinion, is a realist view of the world. And what is that? Well, you have to recognize three different levels. First one, the world exists as it is, prior to a cognitive agent's perception thereof. Now, cognitive agents build up true observations, cognitive reservations of the world. I said true observations. Third level, to make these representations publicly accessible in some enduring fashion, these agents create representational artifacts that are fixed in some medium. But beware, these concretizations are not supposed to be the representation of these cognitive representations. We should not be in the business of concept representation, although there is an IMIA working group on that. They are representations of the corresponding parts of reality. They are like the images taken by means of a high-quality camera. They are not like the paintings of Salvador Dali. Now, this is non-canonical anatomy. It's nice, but it's non-canonical anatomy. Now, the sad consequences are that too much focus on concepts, information models, and data models, and hence many mistakes in concept-based terminologies, for which not HL7 is to be blamed, of course not. And also many ambiguities in electronic patient records in which such terminologies are used. But there is another misconception, and which has just brought up. It's the notion of semantic interoperability, and that things become semantically interoperable if you use terminologies. Well, here I show you that that is not the case. So here's an example. Take a patient database. On the left-hand side, you have the unique patient ID. You have a date upon which an observation was made. You have a SNOMED code, and you have the preferred term of the SNOMED code. Now, what I usually do, we don't have the time here, but is to ask our audience in that table how many distinct disorders are there. And people are looking for it then for 10, 15 minutes, and then I get answers anything between 5 and 15. Now, what are the problems? Well, look at some first. If there are two different fracture codes used in relation to observations made on the same day for the same patient, then they might indeed refer to the same fracture. If, on the other hand, the same fracture code is used for the same patient on different dates, then these codes might or might not refer to the same fracture. Now, these probably do, because the date is very close, but this one doesn't. Now, there is nothing in the code that will tell you that. Here, for hypertension, three references of hypertension for the same patient denote three times the same disease. You do not have hypertension in 1984, and 10 years later, another hypertension. You have your hypertension, if you still have it all the time. If two different tumor codes are used in relation to observations made on different dates for the same patient, they may still refer to the same tumor. A benign tumor might become malignant, but it's still the very same tumor. There is only one tumor. The same fracture code used in relation to two different patients cannot refer to the same fracture. That's an easy one. My fracture can never be your fracture. And then these things, such as accident in public building, might or might not refer to the same location. Now, what are the consequences of that? Well, it is very difficult to count the number of numerically different diseases. So you get bad statistics on incidence and prevalence, and it's a bad basis for health cost containment. And it is also difficult to relate numerically the same or different causal factors to disorders. So you can't distinguish between dangerous public places, dogs with rabies, HIVs, contaminated blood from donors, and so forth. And that hampers prevention. Now, as a solution to that, and that's my main area of research in Buffalo, and for which I have been given a very generous startup budget, is to solve that problem. So reference tracking is about making explicit reference to the concrete individual entities relevant to the accurate description of each patient's condition, therapy, or outcomes. This guy had already a good idea. Let's clear up the mess there. Well, I do it a little bit different. I introduce instance unique identifiers for each relevant particle. So UMLS has a patent on the QIs and the LUIs and the PUIs and the SUIs. I've got the UIs. So what does this mean? Well, normally you would have a statement like this in a record. First thing that you need to do on the reference tracking is assign to each particular element a unique ID. Then you can use types or a coding system, and then you say that they are one is an instance of the other. And if you do that with similar sentences from other patients, you apply the same procedure. But note that in this case, because those two patients have been treated in the same facility with the same machine, there you use the unique ID for that specific machine, for the hospital, and so forth. And the same thing so does need to be done for diseases, for body parts, and so forth. And then you get this picture, that on the bottom you have the electronic health tracker, on the top you have the ontologies, and the only relationship that should be there is that of instantiation. If you assign UIs in this sense, then you will see that indeed there are seven distinct disorders in that table. Now the question is, does HL7 support this? And I really wish that HL7 would be able to support this. Well, at first sight, yes. So they have the notion of unique identifiers. They define entity as a physical thing, group of physical things or an organization capable of participating in acts. And they have also the entity ID, so a unique identifier for the entity. But on closer inspection, no. Because if we read further through the document, then it says an entity is a physical object that has had or will have existence. Now, will have existence does not mean existence. So in reference tracking is about those kind of things, very precise. You can now make the plan to do an act So the plan now exists, but that act does not exist. Secondly, we read further, an entity may at times represent information. Now, this does not need to be a problem if for each entity it is specified, whether it is a first-order entity, such as my liver or my head, or whether it is a second-order entity, information in a machine about my liver or about my head. But unfortunately, it is not all the time clear. So there is that double confusion. X is information about X, X is observation of X. But clearly, the following entities are all distinct. The pimple on my nose, the observing of the pimple on my nose by that man asserting the existence of the pimple on my nose, the information object in the record which refers to the pimple on my nose, are all real but are different things. Now, some claim that all these distinctions are in HL7. So I had discussions with many people about this. So one said, in HL7 we assert that Peter has a UML symbol with an object instance identifier assigned to his disease that includes an instance identifier assigned to his type of disease. And then in the confrontation, in the discussion, it was continued, once consensus builds around the subject of concern, the patient can be said to have a specific disease. It can be said that over time, the UML symbol instance identifier for the concern becomes the UML symbol instance identifier for the disease. He was here referring to Larry Weed's model of problem-oriented medical records, where you start with a problem and associate everything. So that's the concern. The concern becomes the disease. Now, who is then sick, the clinician or the patient? There is hope. When I ask the question, what kind of identifiers is the RIM using and what kind of identifiers go in HL7 messages? And moreover, what kind of identifiers are used in what place in object-oriented paradigms, UML objects, etc.? I got the answer. We agree very strongly in this area. The agreement is about there is a big confusion here. I have been suggesting for many years that these proxy identifiers not be used as object instance identifiers. Fortunately, more HL7 version 3 people are beginning to agree, and the II data type that's about the identifiers will soon allow us to differentiate between proxy instance identifiers and the truly arbitrary object instance identifiers known as UUIDs, QIDs, or other similar constructs. Soon, but at least until then, HL7 RIM is a Picasso interpretation of a Dali painting.
Thank you. Actually, we didn't plan that. Thank you, Vern. While they're switching that, Chris will be talking about the RIM in the context of U.S. and international.